John, you raise some interesting selections here once caught in this scenario, and we'll certainly come back and look at all the things that got us to this point. But you have just gotten airborne, you're reaching for the gear handle, and ATC, that entity that we all know, love, ATC has just told us, cancel takeoff clearance. What are pilots going to do? And, you know, all pilots are not the same. Do we continue the takeoff, or do you pull back on the throttles and land straight ahead?
Well, that's a good question. Even though we did construct this scenario to prove a point, and neither one of these options was really very good, and neither one of them is good, it's because you got to a point where you only were left with two very bad options. So the choices started much further back in this sequence of events here. But so now we're at this situation, we're 50 feet off the ground, takeoff power. You got to continue because you don't know what's ahead of you. If you landed, if you tried to chop the throttles and land straight ahead, you have no idea what's on the taxiway. You have no idea what conditions are up there. There could be a vehicle on it or something. It's a bad choice, but it's the only choice that you really have. You got to go straight ahead. But also from the controller issuing those instructions to cancel the takeoff clearance, that's really the only option that the controller has at that point. They're looking down from 150-foot elevation above the field, something like that, probably a mile away. It's virtually impossible to tell whether the airplane is actually on the taxiway or has taken off or not. The only thing that the controller would see would be that the airplane has started accelerating to the point where it appears that they're taking off and they can see that the airplane is clearly on the taxiway. Some airports have ground radar or other aids, but the point is that just because ATC says something like that doesn't mean that that's your only choice. At that point, you have to weigh the decisions and weigh the options and go with the decision to continue straight ahead and deal with it best you can after that.
Bob, let's put ourselves in this cockpit here. I mean, you know, you are a pilot, and all of a sudden your world has really gone south right now. Might there be some reason to panic and maybe make an irrational decision that could really set up a nasty sequence of events here?
That could very possibly happen. Maybe that the pilot is programmed in his mind to listen to ATC, and when they say cancel the takeoff clearance, that pilot pulls the throttles. Hopefully, if he were to do such a thing, he would not have retracted the gear just prior to that, because clearly this airplane is off the ground. If the pilot is reaching for the gear handle, I would say the airplane has already left the ground. And to return to the ground puts you in a position where you've got some unknowns. How much taxiway, in this case, is available for landing? Is there traffic on that taxiway moving in the other direction or across it? So it's really problematical putting the airplane back on the ground, but that could happen, could very well happen. And it could also happen that by the time the pilot responds to ATC, he's already retracted the gear and then attempts to put the airplane back on the ground and can't quite get the gear reversed into the down position before it meets the taxiway again. So certainly that could happen. My instinct would be to keep going, personally.
The first words out of your mouth right now to ATC, they've told you cancel takeoff clearance. I know you're going to keep on going. What do you say? Do you start off with an apology? Do you start off saying, I'm sorry? Or, you know, what are your words? How do you handle this professionally?
Well, that's a great question. I don't know what I would say to ATC, but earlier I told you my decision was to keep going. But that was based on the fact that I knew our scenario pilot took off on the taxiway. I have to say, we don't know whether he knew that or not. If he suspected or if he believed he took off on the runway, and if I believed I took off on the runway, I might be inclined to put that thing back on the ground. Knowing that he was on the taxiway, obviously that would be a very dangerous thing to re-land on the taxiway. Probably the first response would be say again, and then second would probably be an apology if he realized what he'd done.
One word that comes to mind, and from a mutual friend of ours, really is a very, very good word when you were talking to ATC, and that is the single word, unable. I'm airborne. You've placed that air traffic controller in your cockpit. And as you clearly indicated, there's obviously a breakdown. ATC thinks you're still on the taxiway, and you have clearly communicated. So I think it's a good word to keep in our pilot vocabulary, unable, and then follow up with why you're unable. And that is, I'm airborne, continuing straight ahead. And then ATC can give you next instructions. But, you know, we have a bad situation. The most important thing is to not make it worse. Nobody's hurt. No imminent danger once you're airborne, but going back on the ground may very well create imminent danger for you and for others on the ground. So I think while things are happening very, very quickly here, we have to not make the situation any worse. So I think we all agree, obviously, the best situation is to keep it going, but to make sure that it only improves from this point, we do need to clearly indicate to ATC what is going on and what your intentions are. And then you can start resolving it, trying to slow down your heartbeat, which is going to be a real challenge. We've looked at this terrible, terrible fix that we've placed ourselves in. Let's now backtrack to see how this thing started unwinding. John, what were some of the very first things that could have been done better to kind of get this situation off on a much better footing?
Well, I think the very first thing that started this was whether this pilot wanted to admit it or not, he was task overloaded. He just piled on too much. It started out with the best intentions, kind of like a fun trip. We're going to give back to the community. We're going to help these people. We're going to get to go to a big airport, and we're going to get to land for free. Now, all of a sudden, it turns into a dark night. The airport's busy. We've got distractions from these passengers. We may have told them about a sterile cockpit, but we're not really enforcing it. We might need to just turn around and say, folks, you just need to be quiet for a couple of minutes here. Turn off their headsets if you have to. Do what you got to do. And then when things started unraveling a little bit, even though you got the taxi clearance, you're not really sure of exactly how you're going to execute this taxi clearance. Reading it back is one thing. Executing it is another thing, where we've now gotten ourselves in a situation where we're not really sure where we're supposed to be. We're not really sure where we're supposed to do the run-up. Things are starting to snowball in. And it's one of my favorite things is just do the timeout, ask for a progressive taxi. You have that feeling that something's not right. We need to regain control of this situation, make sure that we're in command.
Just looking at the overall complexity issue, busy airport, at night, in the rain, unfamiliarity, it's almost like you can't get there from here. And there's a reason why we have professional pilots operating in this realm and not rank amateurs. And so sure, you're a qualified pilot, but this situation, I mean, what advice would you give to this guy who comes to you and say, hey, Wally, I think this would be cool. What do you think? Am I up to the task? What advice would you give this guy?
And you're tasking yourself an awful lot to deal with an airport like that. We've all been down in these airports where you're down in that sea of blue lights. And it's one thing for an airliner to taxi around where they're up there two or three stories and they get the big picture. We just see that sea of blue lights. It's just way more task than I would want to deal with if I could avoid it. And he probably could have avoided it by landing at an outlying airport, solved this whole problem. But it's cool to go to these big places. Pilots like to do that.
Maybe cool, but not necessarily smart. Bob, you've done a lot of night flying. Night vision creates some real challenges for us from an aviation physiology perspective. Most pilots have received no training in this. The information is available, but it requires us to pull a book down from the shelf that we don't refer to very often. But let's look at this night vision adaptation and how well prepared are we to enter this sea of lights at a major airport?
Certainly, it takes a while to adjust to the lighting as you get out on the taxiway. Typically, the ramp areas are reasonably bright at these large airports. And as you move away from the ramp, you've got to really take it slow and allow your eyes to adjust. And certainly, I think as you get older, it takes a little bit longer for that to happen. And specifically in this case, we had a poor quality windshield, let's call it, and probably should have been replaced. We've got rain on the windshield, which creates more distortion. So you've got a number of factors there that are just making it very difficult to pinpoint your location as you're trying to watch taxiway signs and keep track to where you are. This certainly would have been a good case for having a second competent pilot with you to help you navigate doing that, because you need to keep the airplane on the center line at a taxiway, and you've got to be very careful in terms of following along as to where you are on that taxiway. Okay, we just passed Alpha 4. Okay, here comes Kilo. We'll make a slight right on Kilo. It's a lot easier with someone else with their finger on the taxiway chart, or if you've got a moving map type taxiway chart, someone watching where exactly you are and coaching you along in terms of, okay, our next intersection is going to be such and such. And that way it's a lot easier. But moving out quickly from the ramp, sometimes very difficult because it's even difficult to see the taxi signs. You've got to give yourself some time. It takes several minutes for your eyesight to begin to adjust out on these dark taxiways.
Recognizing that this intersection was designated on the taxi chart as a hotspot should have brought that pilot's level of attention up even more. And recognizing that he was having trouble seeing, he certainly could have utilized ATC a little bit more. He could have said, the runway is at this intersection or is it 200 feet in front of me? John, they've got probably ground radar there. They could have given right. him some pretty
and,
good...
And the controller would much rather answer several questions about or giving advice rather than have a situation like this develop. And it goes back to the old thing about progressive taxi. Don't try and bite off more than you can chew. Let's take it 200 feet at a time if we have to. We'll move up a little bit to the next intersection and get another clearance. Move up to the next intersection and get another clearance. the controller can use even headings on the ground. You should be back taxiing the runway, the parallel here. So your compass or your DG should be reading 280 while you're on the taxiway. Now the second left is going to be 210 degrees. It helps just to visualize on that. And a controller will do that and be able to, it's not vectoring, but it's using the DG for assistance.
And this is a unique situation here. Kilo Taxiway actually crosses
the threshold
prior to the threshold of runway 21. So
right. It
makes it particularly difficult to see where the runway is, I think.
Right. And it's going to be an interesting change of runway and taxiway lighting, because you're coming along on that one taxiway, blue lights on both sides, and then all of a sudden you've got runway threshold lights on one side. That may not be a situation that you've ever seen before either. The other side of the taxiway has blue lights, and the left side has threshold lights. So pre-planning,
yeah,
obviously, and that's why it was designated as that.
Right.
Bob, you earlier used a good word on able, and the word I would use in this circumstance is confirm. Confirm runway is my next left turn. Just that simple question could have prevented a taxiway takeoff.
And once again, this pilot was trying to do it the right way. He had a plan. He studied the material. But all of a sudden, a dramatic change occurred, a runway change, which literally put him back at the starting gate again, which meant that he had a whole bunch more planning to do to decide how he was going to deal with his new plan. And how much time did he have to do that? In the situation as described, he didn't use any time. So all the more reason why you ask for a timeout or say, I need to stop here or get more information. But he needs to manage his cockpit. And at least temporarily, he has kind of dropped way behind his airplane and needs to regain control of his airplane. Bob said, I think having another pilot with you would have, it just would have helped immeasurably with regard to, okay, here's where we are. Here's the chart you need. And just trying to, two minds are always better than one in a situation like this, especially regard to keeping track of where you are. But managing your cockpit is really the key. And he lost control, John.
Having another pilot is good as long as you're both on the same page and you both talked about this beforehand and exactly how we're going to execute this and who's going to take what role in it and make sure that we're both clear on that, because we don't want to be out there in the middle of that intersection having an argument over which way we're going to go. So we really need to make sure that we're on top of that piece of it too.
And once again, the essence of cockpit crew resource management, whatever you want to call it, is making sure before you ever set foot inside that airplane, this is how we're going to deal with the situation. Any uncertainty, speak up if there's any confusion or complexity changes, and we deal with that. You have a good question, ask the question. Are we where we think we are? You know, does this look right? Does it feel right? And there had to be a point in this thing where the guy said, this doesn't feel right. It doesn't look right. I'm not comfortable.
Cockpit resource management, you talked about that. And it's more than just cockpit resource management with the two people. If there are two people in the cockpit, it could be a single person. But there are resources outside the cockpit. Okay, ATC, obviously, we talked about that. Perhaps not applicable in this situation, but in other cases, if you really, really got totally confused and you were not able to do anything, the airport would send a vehicle out there and with a follow me and get you home that way. And that's just another resource. It may be pretty dramatic, but in the course of my 27-something years, we've had to use that at times to rescue people and bring somebody back home.
You make a good point about the timeouts, Bob. I don't think the issue of the SID was ever resolved.
No. And any unresolved issue is just the baggage. Just, you know,
it's
all part of the baggage you're carrying.
Weighting him down.
That's right.
Yeah.
And you can only think every pilot ever born has a capacity. Some have more capacity than others. But as you're approaching your individual capacity, you're getting ready to go tilt, just like the old pinball machines. You can shake and rattle them up to a point and then go to a tilt mode. And every pilot approaches capacity. This guy was approaching his capacity. And another issue that we've talked about over and over again in this scenario that was just kind of like the woodpecker just kind of pecking away was this background noise. Passengers can be an asset or they can be a liability. In this case here, they didn't do anything dangerous, but they were really, truly getting in the way of him accomplishing what he was trying to accomplish under very difficult conditions.
Managing distractions, that's what it's all about. There was multiple distractions here that prevented the pilot from focusing on the task at hand. The task at hand was navigating the airplane to the departure runway. For the change in the runway assignment, not having the right departure procedure, the rain, all of this was just distractions that just kept adding and adding and adding.
Let me add another one. Being the oldest one here at the table, I think I can say this without insulting anybody. I don't see as good at night as I used to 20 years ago. As you get older, we need to factor that fact into our operation. We need to move slower, be more cautious rather than less cautious.
Maybe at this point, when it started getting dark, it was time to say, you know what, this mission's not going to take place at night. I'm going to take off and go back home, and I'm sorry, guys, but you're going to have to get another ride.
Everything takes longer. I don't care if you're older or younger or anything else. It just flat takes longer because we just don't have the visual feedback that we need. And once again, without that information, it's just a delaying process that is constantly ongoing, and we have to deal with it. How do we avoid this situation? It starts with a good plan. But as that plan, what plan ever goes the way we lay it out? Once again, we have to be flexible, we have to be adaptable, and we need to respond accordingly. This guy had a plan, but as it started breaking down, he never took control of his cockpit, managed his cockpit to the point where he was able to be in sync with ATC.
I have some numbers from an FAA Runway Incursion Incident Evaluation Program, pretty official sounding name. But they're kind of interesting to just maybe help us analyze where we are most vulnerable with this runway incursion thing. They say that 72% of the pilots who had runway incursions did not write down their taxi clearance. So if you choose not to write down your taxi clearance, I think this scenario pilot did probably, he got it okay. But if you choose not to write down your taxi clearance, that's putting you in a pretty strong group that's possibly be have an incursion. 40% of those people who had incursions did not use taxi diagrams. So there's another tool you can use to try to stay out of that group. They also said the majority of the incursions occurred during taxi out, just like our scenario pilot. Kind of interesting, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Let's not ignore what after landing is all about. We get on the ground and we kind of think, flight's over, we made it. But sometimes getting back to the ramp, especially at an unfamiliar location, you know, we're very, very vulnerable. I mean, you can end up on the grass, you can end up in a ditch just because you make a wrong turn. We had a guy come into the FAA for a check ride and he taxied into a stop sign. He was going to taxi down a road. You say, how screwed up can we get when we are a little bit disoriented?
On most of these general aviation airplanes operating at night with the lighting that's provided on the airplane, which is marginal at best, it's very easy to miss a taxiway or an obstacle on the ramp area that requires particular scrutiny and caution at night.
We have all these painted diagrams and signs and symbols on the taxiways. Can you see them from a general aviation airplane? No, you can't. At night in the rain. You know, the whole short lines, in the rain, they're there, but from 6 inches above the ground, you're just not going to see them.